I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Good morning. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You may also be listening online at citr.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. Today on the show, John Haynes talks about In Search of Simplicity, and we're having a bit of technical difficulty, so I'm just going to bring him right up on the air here. Hi, John. John, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, so we'll be back in just a moment with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul.
The CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. To submit your comments, visit the website crtc.notlaw.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
We'll do it live!
If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
But hi, we're back with Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. And on the show is John Haynes. Hi, welcome to the show, John.
Thank you very much, Marie. I understand that our connection here across the oceans isn't very good.
No, so you're calling from New Zealand today.
I am, and as a matter of fact, it's not even September 11th for me. It's September 12th at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my goodness. Well, today it's September 11th for us here in North America, and I thank you for getting up out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning to speak with us about your book, In Search of Simplicity.
It's my pleasure. I just wish we had a better connection. We have a bit of moisture here, and I think that's probably breaking up some part of the interface between us.
All right. Well, hopefully everyone will be able to hear you. I can hear you all right now. So can you hear me okay?
Oh, you're just coming in crystal clear like you're right next door.
Excellent. Okay. So let's start out. It is September 11th here. I know it's September 12th where you are. But here it is September 11th, which as we all know is the anniversary of September 11th, 2001. And one of the interesting things, I want to talk about your book, but one of the things that happens in your book, and this is something that happened in real life, is that you were actually on a plane that was hijacked.
I was. That obviously wasn't on September 11th. That was on July 6, 1984, in Kashmir in northern India. I was working in the Middle East for Bell Canada International at the time. I was on a vacation, and I'd been in Kashmir for close to 2 weeks, but there were a lot of problems at the time. This was when Indira Gandhi had sent her troops into the Golden Temple in Amritsar, in the Punjab. So the Sikhs were extremely upset by that. That's a little bit like sending the troops into the Vatican for Catholics. This was the holy temple for the Sikh population. And so they, well, I was on a plane. What happened was there was a few other things going on at the time. In Kashmir, which is a Muslim population to a large extent, the leader of the Kashmiris was Dr. Farooq Abdullah. Let me just ask you, first of all, can you still hear me?
I can. It's really fuzzy. It's quite fuzzy, but we are able to hear you. So, what I'm really interested in understanding, I can imagine that that experience is one of the experiences that inspired you to write this book, and obviously the experience of being on a plane that was hijacked is very can touch our hearts when we remember September 11th. So, what do you have to say to the people of the world who have been so affected by the events of September 11th related to your experience on that plane? How did it change you? And what do you think we as a human race need to do to move beyond this level of terrorism that happens in the world?
Well, it is quite clear. In my way of thinking, first of all, as I was saying, that the issue that was going on at the time of the hijacking for me was of a group of people who felt that they had been unduly treated by another group of people. And so their act of, in this case, this hijacking, was to bring world attention to what they considered to be an injustice. Now, I'll take you to a quote from a lovely book that I've always enjoyed, and it's Richard Bach's book, Illusions. And in that book, he says, the mark of our ignorance is the depth of our belief in injustice and tragedy. What the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly. So one thing that I think we need to really strongly look at is what we call injustice. And this can be in an individual instance, or it can be in a collective situation like we had on 9/11, September 11th. When I was on this plane, it was hijacked by Sikhs. I was only on the plane with the kind assistance of a Sikh man who I was sitting beside on the airplane. Because there were so many difficulties in Kashmir, I was escaping from the terrorism that was happening in the streets. There was all sorts of martial law and everything else, and I wanted to get out earlier, and I wasn't scheduled to be on that flight. My feelings towards Sikhs today are just as I would have towards any other group. We're all human beings, so I think we need to search in our hearts for forgiveness. Just like Jesus said, turn the other cheek, and the words that really come to my mind are from Khalil Gibran, who said, an eye for an eye, because I believe what we're having now with a war on terror is actually only, it's like when we resist something, it persists. Whatever we resist persists. And when we're resisting terrorism, we're actually perpetuating this cycle of violence. And I think about the young people growing up in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, the young men in particular, you're only creating hatred in their hearts. And so I think we all have to search deep in our hearts and find forgiveness. And as I was about to say, when Khalil Gibran said this, an eye for an eye, and the whole world goes blind. I believe we've been living for several thousand years in blindness as a collective human race. And because we're still perpetuating violence, we're always using retribution rather than searching deep inside and looking at every other person in the same way, and recognizing the divinity, the light that's shining through them, not their actions. Like Gandhi used to say, it's not the person that I'm stepping up against here, it's their actions. We love everyone, and so we've got to step beyond that. So that's really my feeling about the whole thing.
There's one thing that I want to say, and I was going to do a little bit of a monologue about September 11th, and then we had those the phone problems. So what I want to talk about in regards to September 11th is what you said, that, you know, people that are involved in terrorism, it's because they have beliefs or they have feelings that they have been mistreated by the bad guys. And then the people who perpetrated 9/11 view North Americans as the bad guys. And then North Americans view them as the bad guys. And we're all running around viewing people as the bad guys. And what we need to do is look at each other from a standpoint from love, because that's what is the common thread that runs through all of us, is love. We all want to be loved. We all want to feel safe. We all want to be happy. And that's the thing that I think is the most important. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what belief system your neighbor has. Just because someone believes something differently from you, it doesn't make your truth any less valid for you. Does that make sense?
I would 100% agree. That's in essence what I'm saying, because when we're using the kind of feelings that seem to carry on in a situation like we have in all these 8 years now since September 11th, we're not acting from love. And we all know, like you said, love is our essence. It's the glue that holds the world together. And we need to search for that. Each of us needs to recognize that. And it is in all of us. It is what holds this world together. And I really think that we're ready as a human family, we're ready as humankind to move from human to kind. It's time to... I've got another example. I was just reading about a man named Abdu'l-Bahá, who was the son of the founder of the Baha'i faith, and the Baha'is were largely mistreated by the Shah at the time in Iran, where they came from. Many people were killed. Many martyrs were formed through this situation. But one time, and then they were imprisoned in Akka, in what is today Israel, is Palestine at the time. And after 40 years of being under imprisonment in Israel, they were finally released. And Abdu'l-Bahá was in Paris, and he met the son of the Shah, the son of the man who had actually been responsible for the death of many of his followers. And when the son came up to him, he was deeply sorrowful for what his father had done. And he said, "If I'd lived in another time, I would have done it differently." And what did Abdu'l-Bahá say? He gave him a big embrace, and he said, "That is the past. Let's move on now." Now, that is a big heart that can do that. But I think if we really search deeply, every one of us has the capacity to find that kind of deep-heartedness in ourselves and say, enough is enough. We've all made mistakes in the past. Every individual, every one of us, you and I speaking right now, Marie, we've all made mistakes. Let's forgive ourselves, forgive each other, and move on to a world of peace, which is our birthright and is, frankly, what I say over and over to people in talks that I do. Peace is inevitable. Do we want it now or do we want it later? I'm looking at a white dove flying over the world right now, and I think we should embrace that vision for humanity. It's not that difficult.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for a break already, John. So we'll be back with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul in just a moment. And you can find me online at spiritualshow.com, www.spiritualshow.com. I actually made a YouTube video the other day about love, because I just had this feeling of love come over me, and I wanted to share it with you. So you can feel free to watch that video on my website, spiritualshow.com. And I want to send out love to you wherever you are on this wonderful, beautiful planet that we all share and we all need to take care of and appreciate together. So we'll be back with more Synchronicity in just a second.
Now's the time for Age of Humans. Care for what can be done for yourself.
Promoting their latest album in the ever-expanding universe, the Biltmore Cabaret and the Georgia Strait present Canadian band The Most Serene Republic with Seattle's Grand Archives. They're playing the Biltmore Cabaret on Saturday, September 26th. Doors at 7, show at 8:30. Tickets are on sale now.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. We're speaking with John Haynes, and he is calling from New Zealand right now. The connection is a little bit fuzzy, so I hope you're able to hear it all right. Now, if you want to get on the air, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Or you can email spiritualshow@gmail.com, or you can tweet me, spiritualshow. I do my best to check it as often as I can throughout the hour. So John Haynes' book is called In Search of Simplicity, and you can find him online at insearchofsimplicity.com. Hi, John.
Hello, Marie.
Hi, welcome back. So we're talking about September 11. We're talking about terrorism, and I would like to, now that we've addressed that, I would like to move on to something a little bit more positive, and I think we're moving in that direction with the talk about love and forgiveness. And is that part of what simplicity is about, is being able to love and forgive instead of holding on to this anger and hate for generations?
I would like to think so. I do a practice on a daily basis, or almost daily basis, and I think it's been valuable for me. I call it six healing sounds, and one of the sounds is the heart sound, and the emotions that you let go of, the energy that you let go of at the end of the day when I do this practice from the heart, is things like fear and impatience. And what you're left with when those emotions are released, you're left with joy and light and creativity. And so I think what's happening is we are not physical beings. If we search deep inside, in my own personal experience, and I know the experience of you and many of the listeners, when we actually touch into who we really are, we realize our essence is love. And we're just having we're having physical experiences in physical bodies on a physical planet. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, it's just that I look at this world and our lives as a school. I also look at it as a place to serve and a place to have fun. But in terms of the school, we have been dealing with heavy energies like fear, like hatred, and that's why we've been perpetuating the sorts of scenarios that are played before us on the TV screens every day. So I think we just need to search for those and uncover on a daily basis, on a regular basis, release those negative emotions, and the possibilities exist. I mean, it's a practice that I use, even just breathing and walking outside in nature and embracing the presence, and in that presence, feeling the love, you automatically don't feel those negative emotions. So it's just, for me, it's a matter of humanity waking up to the reality that's behind the illusion of life. And the illusion is this stuff that we see on the TV, on the flickering screen every day.
So, John, I want to talk about the themes of your book. Now, one of the themes is the power of coincidence. And that, I mean, this show is called Synchronicity, so obviously I'm open to talking about coincidence. So tell me what coincidence has to do with your book and what it has to do with simplicity.
Well, the first one that comes to my mind, first of all, my whole journey, as I described in Search of Simplicity, was one of those periods in your life, and we all know how that works, when you're going through a period of intense change, and I was walking out of the world, I didn't even realize that at the time, but I'd worked as a manager for Bell Canada, and then as an advisor for Bell Canada International in the Middle East, and my ambitions at the time, as a young man in my mid to late 20s, wanted to be a millionaire by the time I was 30, and I wanted to be vice president of this huge company, Bell Canada, which was a wonderful company. Those were my very clear ambitions, quite simple, I would call fairly materialistic-based ambitions. But I had so many synchronistic experiences in the adventure that unfolded before me, and that I had to start looking at life differently. And the very first one was when I was in Norway, and I thought I was going to die. I didn't know why. I was on a bus camping trip on the way to the Soviet Union. This was 1986 when we still had a Soviet bloc, and that was one of the easier ways to get there. And to make a long story short, I slipped into a coma, and I had spinal meningitis. I didn't realize that, and none of the people I was traveling with did either. They just knew I was in a coma. The next thing I knew, I woke up briefly, and in front of me, I was lying down, and in front of me was a big needle. And there was a doctor holding it, and there were two people, two nurses on his left, my right, and two of the friends from my trip on my left, his right. And one of those people said to me, "Oh, John, you're awake now. Are you allergic to penicillin?" And I said, "Yes," and I slipped back into the coma. Now, that saved my life, because I was allergic to penicillin. That's what they were about to inject me with. And when I woke up 27 hours later in a hospital in a little town called Molde in Norway, I wondered what it was that woke me up at that precise moment to save my life. And so my journey, that had been one of wanting to see things as you travel, became a journey of wanting to experience more deeply the meaning of life. Why had I woken up at that time? Those deeper questions we all have, but rarely enunciate. Things like, who am I? Where am I going? What am I here to do? Those were the questions that motivated my journey, and I believe that it's the questions that we hold clearly and deeply in our hearts that motivate the experiences that unfold in our lives. So I then had a whole series of experiences that initially led me to live with very simple living people in remote parts of the world, like the Trobriand Islanders and other simple living villages of Papua New Guinea, and like the wonderful people, the Hunzas of what is today northern Pakistan, on the edges of the Pamirs, the Hindu Kush, the Karakorams, and the Himalaya Mountains. And those people touched my heart and gave me pause for remembrance of what simplicity, what I call simplicity of living is. And I think it's getting back to the basics of community and love and, in many cases, growing your own food. And, you know, frankly, those two sets of people I just mentioned, the Hunzas and the Trobriand Islanders, frankly, they're totally untouched by our, quote, financial crisis of today. It means nothing to them. I really think we have to take a good look at some of the systems we've created in our world and have a hard look at them and maybe recreate some that are somewhat more peaceful and more meaningful and more real, more real.
That's a really excellent point, John, because in our society, we are so fortunate to have the wonderful technology that we have. I mean, without it, we wouldn't be speaking right now. We wouldn't be broadcasting this radio program online and over the airwaves. But things like cellular phones and computers, they were initially designed to make human life easier, so that we would have to work less. But the more now we're carrying our cell phones with us, we can't even have a vacation. A lot of people are just addicted to their Blackberries and hardly sleep because they have the phone sitting next to them at night and wake up in the middle of the night. I mean, it's done the opposite of what the intention was. It hasn't made our lives more simple. It's made them more complicated and more removed from community. Instead of getting our majority of our human interaction face to face, a lot of people sit in front of the computer all day, and that's the interaction that they get.
Exactly. And so one of the things that I do, and you wouldn't know it, of course, from the quality of our sound right now, but I'm a voice teacher, and I help people to find their deeper, more resonant, more loving voices, where there's a sort of sense of vulnerability and power. And that comes through being in touch with themselves. And I, frankly, I have to confess, I have never even seen a BlackBerry. I do not have a cell phone. We don't watch television, although we do now. We have teenagers. We watch movies. We didn't have a computer until 3.5 years ago intentionally, and we raised our children largely with homeschooling because we wanted them to have a glimpse of another world that is not the one that they're raised in today. And when I go for a walk on the beach, because we are blessed to live on an absolutely stunning beach here in New Zealand, I don't have a cell phone to walk with. I walk with my bare feet and whoever I'm with, like my wife yesterday, and we are in touch with the elements of the wind and maybe the rain if it's raining, or the sun if it's shining, the sand between our toes. Marie, when I say that to you, I get a feeling of warmth. I get a feeling of love, because that is what makes it work for me. I wrote a blog recently. I said, nature is my bomb, and it was when my mother was dying in Ontario. And I was not able, I'd been over to visit her last year, but it was a very sudden thing, and I knew that if I jumped on an airplane, I wouldn't be there on time. So I was grateful for technology, because I could call her, and my sister would pick up the phone in the hospital, and I could utter the three most important words that I know to my mother, I love you, through that technology. And then I could walk outside on the beach, and I could actually connect more deeply with my mother there through the realm of nature. So I don't know about you, but I would urge a lot of people to take a good close look at their lives and say, who's in charge? Is it your technology, as you were just saying, where you're sleeping wired up almost, or is it you who's in charge of the technology, and are you prepared to use it wisely rather than it using you?
That's an excellent question, and that's one of the things. I used to have my phone on all the time, and I've started turning it off because it's my ability to relax when the phone is off, because if it's on, I could be whatever I'm doing, you can be interrupted, and it's like almost an invasion into your personal space, especially if it's like a telemarketer or someone you don't want to hear from. So I would advise you, you know, if you really want to have a break and meditate or go for a walk. Last night I went to the beach for a walk with my friend, and I bumped into a friend I hadn't seen in a while. And the first thing she asked me I was like, oh, do you still have my phone number? She was like, yeah, do you have your cell phone with you? And of course I didn't, because I don't bring my cell phone to the beach, but she had hers with her. So it was almost like surprising. What? You're not carrying your cell phone? No, sorry. I don't carry it to the beach. So it's time now to take another break. And I think during the break, let's all take a moment to feel love. That's really what my theme is for the past few days, this past week, is this feeling of love, and I really want to expand this feeling of love across the globe. That is the true essence of humanity, of the planet Earth, of animals, of every living thing on this planet, is love. And I think that if we can focus on that and send love out instead of phone calls and emails, the planet will be that much better for it. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in just a moment.
Rude boys, don't cry, don't cry.
Rude boy, don't cry.
Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. This is the September 11th edition of Synchronicity. And I want to thank you for being with me. We're speaking today with John Haynes, author of the book In Search of Simplicity. You can find him online at insearchofsimplicity.com. And if you want to get on the air and ask a question or make a comment, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. You can also email spiritualshow@gmail.com, or you can message me on Twitter. My name there as well is Spiritual Show. And we've been talking before the break about love, and we were talking about technology, but I think that the point that I really want to get across today, and I can't speak for John, but I think that he might agree with me, is that love and forgiveness is what we need to spread across the world today, especially of all days. John, do you agree with that?
Absolutely, Marie. One of the things that I do is I write songs of peace and love, and so it's. I think that there's two ways that we are best able to transmit messages that we wish to transmit to people. And one way is through the telling of stories, and that's why I have written my book as I have, as an autobiographical spiritual adventure story. It is a true story, but it is a series of stories. And it's the same reason that I do my radio show, and I'm sure as you do yours. When we hear people's stories, some part of their story touches ours. That's the human connection, and I find that quite beautiful. And so it is that heart connection through the stories that we touch each other. And I really believe the other place that we really touch deeply is through song and music. And that's why I love to sing and write songs of peace and love, because, like you said, you want to focus on love. Well, I think that's where we need to put our focus, absolutely. If you sow seeds of hatred, the plants that arise from those seeds are certainly genetically related to the hatred that is sown. But when we sow seeds of love, we birth love. So that's our job, really, is to keep loving. And every moment we meet someone, like when you meet your friend on the beach, we feel love for them, and automatically we heal the world. And I think Michael Jackson, speaking from the other side, would be completely at one with us on that right now. Heal the world. Make it a better place for our children.
So, yeah, I totally agree with that. And I just, when you brought up the sowing the seeds of love, even when you cook with love, it tastes different. Well, not if I cook it, but if someone else cooks it, it tastes better.
For most of us, right?
For most of us. But it does make a difference. Your intention really affects the taste of the food and your intention. I mean, this is, we talk about the law of attraction on this show, and the intention that you put forth in your day affects your day. The intention you put forth towards a conversation you're going to have, it affects everything you do, is affected by your intention. And when your intention is love, that's pretty much the highest intention you can have, I think. That I know of.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I've had an experience, Maria, a sort of metaphysical experience, which put me in touch with, I believe, who I am and the Creator. And in that space that I was in, which was formless, it wasn't really a space, I felt like I was the infinitesimally small point of power. All there was love, and this immense power that is indescribable. I'm sure it was more powerful than an atom bomb. That was who I was and who I am and who you are and who everyone is. It's an immense power and an immense love. It's an indescribable. I can't describe it. I did my very best in my writing, but I can only re-experience it through the memory. And that's really all there is. But I want to come back to food. I think it's really glad. I'm glad you brought that up. I always felt growing up that my mother's food was the best food I ever tasted. And frankly, it was because she loved preparing it, and it was prepared with love. And today, I eat very differently than I did growing up. And one of the reasons that I love living where we live here in the far north of New Zealand is that it's a subtropical environment, and we can grow a lot of our food, and we have fresh produce, whether we grow it ourselves or we get it, as I'm going to get in a few hours, from our farmers' markets here. It's right from where we are. And I believe that the vibration in our food has a huge impact on how we as individuals feel. And so when I grow food from the garden and when we harvest it, that food was grown with love. I mean, I make a deep connection with nature. I work with the spirit of the plants and the birds and all that's around me when I'm outside in the garden. So when we harvest that food, and mostly 90% of the time our food is eaten raw, we are eating love. We're eating sunshine in its purest form through the plant kingdom. And when we buy food from the supermarket, and I'm a nutrition tutor as well, so I really look closely at our food up today, most of that food comes vast distances, is grown with monocropping, with chemicals. The person who's growing it isn't in touch with the food. It's done in large scale with machinery. And then it's transported using large amounts of oil to get to us.
Oh, and don't forget the people who pick it for low wages as well.
Exactly. So I don't know how much love we're getting in that food. And then, of course, if you go a further step and you're buying processed food from the supermarket, that is, I don't even call it food. I mean, 90% of the things on the supermarket shelf, to me, are not truly food. They're gut fillers, is what they are. They make us feel full, but I don't believe they're nourishing our essence. And boy, I don't know how other people feel about this, but when I eat fresh things from the garden, as I do every day several times, I am enlivened by the food. I come off the meal ready to roll, and I'm energized by that food. I don't have to eat very much because it's just pure energy I'm eating. And when I am away somewhere and I occasionally indulge in something different, I don't feel the same. I get sluggish. I literally feel different. And I'd like to, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of going on here, but an experience just came into my head that I'd like to describe. What I'm talking about, maybe this will make it more clear for people. My wife and I have been vegetarians, vegans, and mostly raw food eaters for a long time. We've raised our children that way, but our philosophy always with our children was when they go out to a birthday party when they were little or wherever they go, it's their choice what they have. I don't want to detract from them the ability to make choices in their lives. One day our eldest daughter was around 8 or 9 years of age. She went to a small birthday party at a dear friend of hers. They had some chicken. But the chicken wasn't a free-range chicken from a natural farm. It was a chicken from a battery farming operation where the chicken never saw the light of day and was fattened up on hormones and chemicals and then killed for people's food. When she returned from the party, our youngest daughter and I were outside in our garden, surrounded by fruit trees and palm trees, on a trampoline, having some fun. And she came up to us, and she looked up at me, and I consider that I've always loved my children deeply, and that's why we made the choices to have them at home a lot, etc. And she said to me, incredibly angry, she said, "Dad, I hate you." And I thought, where's this coming from? And I looked at her other daughter, and then she was fine. She'd released it. And I turned to Austin and I said, that was the energy of the chicken that was killed that she ate, that she was expressing. And she was a very sensitive little girl, and she'd taken that energy on, and I was thankful that she expressed it, and then she came up on the trampoline, and she jumped with us and had a lot of fun. I don't think that the average person is as sensitive to their bodies as our little girl was, and they're not realizing that they're feeling those feelings from the food they're eating. And I believe, Marie, that a lot of the decisions we make today that are not loving are related to the feelings we're picking up from the food we're eating and from the environment in which we live. And it's very important, once again, it's our personal choices. Where do you buy your food from? Support your local growers, especially the organic ones if possible, and especially the ones that are growing in a small scale with love. You're supporting them the perpetuation of sustainable, loving ways of producing food in our world. And I think that has the ability to make this world a much saner and gentler place.
Wonderful. Well, I totally agree with that. In first year English, I wrote an essay about factory farming, and you can look at it from a spiritual standpoint of that energy energetically, but even if you look at it from a scientific standpoint, you have to take into consideration that these animals that are bred in unhealthy, loud, crazy, filthy environments and pumped with all these drugs and antibiotics, the hormones that go through their body, the adrenaline, all of those things, the cortisol, all of that comes into the meat. So even if you're not looking at it from a spiritual standpoint, the actual physical meat is different than a free-range chicken that gets petted every day and is loved.
Exactly. But it's that energy. We had the experience once with our two girls of living on a country property here in New Zealand, and this country is a beautiful place with lots of forest, but in between the forest you have rolling paddocks, rolling fields covered with grass and grazed in our part of the country largely by cattle. In some other parts it's largely by sheep. And we were, right beside us were two men. This was at dusk one autumn evening, and these men had these cattle coming up of a rampway, and they were branding them and marking them, and I think they were marking them which ones were going to be slaughtered. And they were doing it in a very rough manner, and the cattle were bawling. That's the only term I can use. It was like they were crying out loud. And I was standing there with our two girls, and I said, "Girls, you can feel what these cattle feel right now, can't you?" And they said, "Yes, Daddy, we can." I said, "I want you to do something with me right now. I want you to tell them that you love them, and they will know that." And so the three of us, a man and his two little girls, stood at a fence and watched what I considered to be an act that was not of love, but we just said to those animals, "We love you." And I think that's what it's all about, Marie. It's very little more than that. I once had the experience when we lived in New Mexico of, I used to go and collect horse manure for our garden because there was virtually no soil in the place we lived. I used to say that our soil was down at our friend's place, a mile from where we lived. It all eroded away. And so I would build up the soil by collecting horse manure and adding worms to it and kitchen scraps and the like to create some soil. And at this farm where I was collecting, or at this place where I was collecting the manure, because a lot of people have horses there, they had some chickens, and all of a sudden this chicken came roaring out, flying, but just off the ground, out of the hen house in front of me. And it was being chased at full speed by a rooster. And then the chicken turned around and it landed right in front of me. It was no coincidence, as we're talking about synchronicity. And this rooster raped it. That's all I can call it. The rooster raped it. The chicken was not interested in doing anything with this rooster. And from that moment on, I said, "I don't want to eat eggs. I'm sorry. I just don't want to do this." Because I really believe we get the energy from our food. And like you said earlier in the program, when something's prepared with food, maybe with the exception of when you cook, Marie, it does taste better. And that energy is what we're tasting. We're tasting the love that's put into it. And when the food has that other kind of energy, and I don't want anything to do with it, frankly. I just don't. I want to feel feelings of love.
Okay. Well, I have to clarify, I'm not really that bad a cook. I was just joking about that. So I'm not the best cook, but I can cook. So yeah, if you ever come over to my house for dinner, I promise you'll leave feeling fine.
Okay. I'll pick you up on that someday. I'll get
some. All right. So it's time now for another break. You're listening to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM. or you may be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. We'll be back with more of John Haynes' In Search of Simplicity in just a moment. Thanks for being with us.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. We're talking with John Haynes, author of In Search of Simplicity. You can find him online at insearchofsimplicity.com. And we're talking right now about love. And I want to ask you, John, before the experience of the hijacking and the being in the coma from the spinal meningitis, were you the same way? Were you loving? Were you a vegetarian? Or did those experiences change you?
They did. They were part of a continuum of experiences that changed me. I believe that one of the first experiences that really converted me, first of all, I wasn't a vegetarian. I was raised with a typical meat, potato, and vegetable diet in Ontario. But when I was 19, I completed my first year of university at McMaster University, and I was in pre-medicine at the time. And I was working for the telephone company as a summer job, repairing telephones, which I absolutely loved because it was a job of service. But just before that, just when I finished university, it was April, and I got together with an old friend. I was born and raised for my first 10 years in Niagara Falls, Ontario, but then we left. And I got in touch with my old best friend, Greg, my next-door neighbor from Niagara Falls. And I hadn't seen him in probably 8 or 9 years. And so we got in touch, and we went on a canoe trip on the Magnetawan River that flows into Georgian Bay in April after exams. To make a long story short, there had been a lot of, we'd had some snow the night before, and we hadn't seen any houses for about a day of paddling, and the river broadened out into a lake, and there was one house on the right-hand side, an A-frame house surrounded by coniferous trees, and we thought, oh, that's neat, and there was smoke coming from the chimney, and then that little broadening of this river, which was almost like a pond, narrowed again and quite quickly, and there was no portage sign, so we didn't get out to check what was in front of us, which we'd been doing as we went along the river. The next thing we knew, we were surrounded by rock walls in a tiny canyon, and to make a long story short, we went over a waterfall, and I was holding onto the canoe, thinking, well, no matter what happens here, this canoe is going to come up to the surface. I'm not going to let go of it. But while I went under the water, over the waterfall, I had a near-death experience where I saw my life flash before my eyes. And I believe that that changed my life. I didn't know it at the time, but some significant things changed not long after. Within a few months, I woke up one morning with the realization I wanted to change into business school. I had no reason why. It was only about a week before school was supposed to start. And I went up to the university and I saw the dean of business, and they said, no, you can't change. And I said, look, I'm going to sit here until you let me change courses. I don't care how late this is. I know this is what I have to do. And you know what it's like, Marie. There are times in your life when you know, you don't know why, you don't know how, you just know you have to do something. And that was one of those times for me. I think it was related to the experience that I'd had. Something came through in me that was different. And like I had the near-death experience with the meningitis, something changed. So, and the other thing that happened was I became a vegetarian. I was reading a book about it, and I thought, I want to do this. And so I did, and I've been one ever since. And I think that there are key moments in our lives where we pick up things that I believe we decided to do before we were born. This is maybe not how everyone would perceive it, but I like to think we have a contract with life. And when we're living the contract, that's when the synchronicities occur. They may be painful at the time, but they have meaning, and they give us messages. And if we listen to the messages, we continue to evolve as individuals, and our lives become more different, more meaningful, and richer and more joyful. And so that's how it started for me. Yes, the experiences that I described were part of it, but they were just a continuum of experiences that continue to this day, of course, that propel me to make decisions that I like to think are more in keeping with the essence of love that is who we are. And frankly, when I became a vegetarian, I wasn't thinking about the animals. I was thinking about my own health. It's only been in the years since then, it's been many years, that I've seen it from a broader perspective and realized the way I eat also contributes to how other beings on this planet are treated, and I want to do it in a way where I'm not contributing to their pain. I want to contribute to other beings having an opportunity to live peacefully in the planet. So that's why I eat the way that I do today.
Wonderful. Well, John, we just have a few minutes left in the show, and I want to make sure that we get across everything that you want to say. And I think that this discussion about love, I'm really happy with it, because this is what I've been wanting to get across about September 11th. I think before we wrap up and I ask my final questions, I just want to talk a little bit more about September 11th. I want to say, you know, we've been talking about, we started off talking about John's experience with the hijacking, and obviously he did escape with his life still intact, but he was able to forgive. And I think that no matter what a person does, people make mistakes, people do stupid things. I'm sure that the people that perpetrated the crimes on 9/11, you know, unfortunately, they probably believed that they were doing the right thing. And what I would like to see happen from 9/11 is that we make it stand for something. We make that loss of life stand for something, and the loss of lives that continues on every day. Thousands of people die every day, and we're still experiencing war and terror on a daily basis across the world. And what I would like to see is that we turn it around and we let it stand for love, and instead we choose to focus on loving instead of the anger and the hatred and the frustration. And of course, people are very justified to feel angry, but it's not going to make the world a better place, and it's not going to change the situation. It's not going to stop terrorism from happening. The only thing, in my opinion, that is going to stop terrorism and help us all connect and live the life that we all want to live is when we start treating everyone like a brother or a sister or a mother or a father. We start treating everyone with love. And John, I want to ask you, if there's, we have a few minutes left in the show, what is the one thing that you want to make sure that our listeners hear today?
Well, I had something else in mind, but in listening to what you just said and going back to an earlier moment in the program, first of all, I want to say I don't think anger is ever justified. It's when we hold on to something, and it is, then we would feel anger. But Peace Pilgrim, the lady who walked back and forth across North America more than six times with nothing except the tunic that she wore, a hairbrush and a comb and a toothbrush and some paper and a pen for correspondence for 28 years, she said anger is just a bad habit. And she just relinquished it. And I think we all have the ability to do that. I never saw my mother angry in all of her 77 years. So I had the experience, and I can't say that the same for myself, but I'd like to think that she was one of my best teachers. And I think that every time anything happens and we feel anger, look at ourselves. It's not the other person. And so I think my message that I'd like to leave everyone with is that the problem's not outside. It's in us. It's not somebody else. It's me. we have to look deeply in our hearts and look and release those things from our past that are preventing us from forgiving, that are preventing us from feeling love and kindness towards the person who may not be treating us that way, and saying, okay, that's just their immaturity as a human being that makes them feel that way. I can accept that, but I'm not going to feel that way myself. I'm going to love them. I'm going to embrace them, either with my arms or at least with my thoughts and my feelings, and say, okay, their experience, and we're all on our own path of self-realization. We're all going to wake up to this someday. Their experience has created feelings for them that are less than loving. I can accept that, but my job is to transcend that and to feel my loving heart and to see the light and the love in all those other people and realize, like you said, Marie, those people feel they're doing the right thing. We all feel we're doing the right thing. But our job individually is to do the more kind thing, the more gentle thing, every moment. Be kind to everyone. Every great teacher, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Krishna, whoever, has taught the same thing. Love thy neighbors as you would love yourself. The golden rule. If we can come back to that, it doesn't matter where we come from. It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. It's time right now to wake up to who we are and to forgive everything that's happened before and to get on with it and have this world transformed in an inkling into a place of love.
John, you mentioned a really big point. It just kind of stood out for me. Love your neighbor as you would love yourself. And the thing is that a lot of people aren't loving themselves much these days either. And so I want to give you permission, if you're listening to this show right now, to love yourself, no matter what mistakes that you've made. It's bringing tears to my eyes because I'm so emotional about this subject. It's so important to love yourself and to accept yourself for who you are. And we all make mistakes and we all can get angry at times. But you always need to remember that you are loved. And in the times when you might not be feeling it from the people that you want to feel it from, remember always to love yourself. I think that's the most, that's where it all starts, because when you're able to love yourself and accept yourself completely, only then can we start to treat others and love others the way we would like to be loved.
Beautifully said, and obviously from your heart, Marie. I would also encourage people to, like you talked about before, let's have experiences, physical experiences with our neighbors and with our friends, not all of them just through the fingertips, but using our voice, as I was about to say earlier. Let's use our voices and our bodies and connect with people. We go once a month here in our local community to our Kaylee dance. There's no alcohol. We all dance together, all ages, and we have an incredible amount of fun. There's a local band playing music. It is just joy. I think we need to bring these kind of events back into our lives. Go out and dance and have fun with your friends. Play games. Be face-to-face and acknowledge the beauty in them. And when you do that, you're acknowledging the beauty in yourself. It's really simple. It really is simple. And accept the experiences and the mistakes you've made, and realize they're not mistakes. They're just the journey of life that you've chosen for. Learn from them, transcend them, and accept them for the beauty that they have been and what they've given you and helped you to learn and grow with. We can do this together. We can make this world a better place. That is my wish for a peaceful world. And I know it's coming, and it's not far away. We just have to want it badly enough. And I think every human being wants it. We want to be loved. We want to be loving with each other. Let's do it now.
Wonderful. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And quickly, where can people get your book, and where and when can people hear your radio show?
okay, the radio shows are available online after they've been recorded, because I do them live here on the radio in New Zealand, and they go on local cable television. So you go to my website, www.insearchofsimplicity.com, go to my radio shows. The book's available, of course, on Amazon.com, and just look for In Search of Simplicity, A True Story That Changes Lives by John P. Haynes. You'll find it. It's got a bright reddish cover with a sunrise of where we live here in New Zealand on the front, so can't miss it.
Beautiful. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Have a wonderful day.
You too, Maria, and thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love BC, and I love Vancouver, and I'm there with you right now. Enjoy.
Wonderful. Thank you. So thank you so much for listening. I hope that you have a wonderful and fantastic weekend. And remember, just right now, just put your hand over your heart and just feel that loving essence running through you. That is the essence that runs through this planet and through this universe. And all we need to do is access it and expand on it, and great things will happen. I'm Marie, and this is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Next week, the show welcomes Marie Diamond, the feng shui expert from the movie The Secret. I'm here every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific, and you can check out past shows on podcast at spiritualshow.com and citr.ca. Up next, Scotty Scenic Drive on 101.9 FM, CITR in Vancouver.